Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
It could be a dangerous show. We will try to keep it straight here, folks. The Media Project is underway. The publisher, the professor, and the editor, Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Freeman in Kingston,
Hello,
is here.
Hello, good to be back.
Wonderful to see you, back from visiting grandkids and so on, yes?
Yes, that's the new grandson, Dylan James Fussfeld in Los Angeles.
How about that? Had a great time. And Dr. Shartok is here.
How'd you do? Glad my name isn't Brent Musburger.
Well, you know, old coots need to stick together. You probably thought that Brent did just fine. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Happy to welcome you to the Media Project. What do you think about Brent Musburger drooling over Catherine Webb, Miss Alabama, on a football game?
Well, you know, I'm for everybody cooling it a little bit. Now, Miss Alabama, she gets herself into a beauty contest. That's her thing. And I'm not going to tell her or anybody else what to do. But when Brent Musburger says, holy cow, look at this, and they pan to her in the audience, she thought it was cute. But, of course, he really got upbraided, including by his own management, for doing that. I don't want to substitute myself for anybody else's conscience here.
You talk about a broadcasting outlet trying to have it both ways. I mean, what does
good for you?
What does ESPN?
You get into trouble.
Who are the directors on ESPN pointing their cameras at, if not the beautiful women in the stands, the beautiful, often highly cleavaged cheerleaders on the college and pro games? They have a reason for doing that. They're playing to their audience, and they know that they want to see this stuff. And you know, Brent Musburger, what he said, frankly, was milder than the pictures and generally.
What did he say again, Ira?
I didn't watch the game. I saw a clip, so I don't know if he
really
said more than that.
It was really the tone in which he said it. He said, wow!
Yeah.
Since the caveman, nobody's ever done that before.
No, I'm sure. But I think you're exactly right, Ira. It is having it both ways. You know, if the network is going to focus on someone because they're attractive, then they shouldn't scold the person who makes note of that.
ESPN has done a remarkable thing in this country for the sports world because of the variety and the breadth and scope of its coverage. But on the other hand, it has done so much damage in that it glorifies this kind of thing. It glorifies the showboaters in sports. It creates this attitude image that is damaging sports and society in general. And
Well, you know, it works. It brings in a lot of revenue. ESPN is partly owned by the company that owns the Times Union, and so I'm all in favor of it.
I didn't know that.
It's just revenue.
Well, Disney is involved with ESPN.
It's a Disney-Hearst enterprise.
No, I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. And ABC was involved. ABCDH was what we used to call it, right?
Well, Ira Fussfeld,
yes.
The Freeman, and Rex Smith of the Times Union, I'm glad you've had your say on this subject. Because there may be people who disagree with you. And
disagree with what? We said the networks are trying to have it both ways.
Yeah,
you know?
But it's mildly,
that seems pretty obvious.
Mildly critical of those people who have raised the sexist cry here.
No, we're
you
saying...
You may notice how...
How did we not point out that that is, in fact, the case?
You may notice how I assiduously tried to avoid overcommitting.
Baloney!
Yeah, and I don't think we excuse the sexism, but
hardly.
I did excuse Brent Musburger for being a victim of his own network's pictures.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a duplicitous on the part of the network. But
we get a lot of really nice letters here. I used to be allowed to read them, but now Rex, like everything else, because he's a megalomaniac, has taken over the reading of the letters.
Well,
so
it's
here,
true, because
one.
And ordinarily we
it's
don't
true,
pay attention
I didn't do it well. Is that
to,
what you're saying?
Well, you know, what can you do? Ordinarily we ignore the anonymous letters, but here's one from this person.
Well, sure,
be,
because this one's about my
it
paper.
It could be the real name of a person named Truth Teller in Rosendale, New York.
Was he, does he, yeah, he was a magician. Was it Penn and Truth Teller?
Penn and Truth Teller, yeah. Absolutely. So Truth Teller says, when Ira Fussfeld's passing himself off as Mr. Reasonable on the Media Project, this is the, can I say crap on this?
Too late.
That's center stage in his paper. How about you pull this out the next time he's on and address the issue of editors throwing rotten red meat to the ignorant jerks and internet trolls? This pandering is undignified. It doesn't represent an honest position. And it's somebody who doesn't like a column published in the Daily Freeman.
Although it might be the editorial cartoon, which was equally right-wing and reactionary. It was the column was by Michael Reagan, the son of the late president. And the editorial cartoon was suggesting that David Gregory should be castigated, if not arrested, for the incident with the magazine on the NRA issue. And
castigated is the word you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. Castigated. And I'm glad the reader has read it and is reacting. And I would suggest, although I do accept and, in fact, endorse my comment as being Mr. Reasonable. And, in fact, it should be extended to the fact that we use this material because our editorial pages, we try very hard to have points of view from all sides. And that certainly was a side or two sides in this case. So I think we were being reasonable. We were not shutting out that point of view.
What's really astonishing to me is when we publish stuff on the opinion pages, people get upset with us and say, you're being biased.
Yeah.
Well, you know, an opinion is intrinsically a bias, isn't it? And so what are they expecting, that we're going to just put out mealy-mouthed, namby-pamby stuff in the opinion pages?
Well, no, that's a problem even here. If we do something called Congressional Corner, we give everybody their say. They say, why don't you beat her up? Why don't you yell at him? And the answer is, why don't you take Herb London, who a couple of minutes on the air every week, who's got a more right-wing perspective, off the air? Because I don't want him on my radio station, they say. No, I don't use the my. So, yeah, I think we all get that. But I think the reasonable folks, of which most people are, understand that this is just a range of opinion. With that said, let me just go on, and say one more thing to both of you, because somebody's got to pick what goes where.
Sure.
And when you do that, you are basically creating a statement. So if Michael Reagan doesn't go in the paper, then it's different than if Michael Reagan does go in the paper. So really, Ira, as I've said many times, you're playing the F sharp on the piano.
Mm.
You have to take responsibility for who you put in that paper.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm proud to. I mean, if you take a look at our newspaper, and it's similar to many. You know, we have published 7 days a week, and on our editorial page, we run two syndicated columns a day. So that's 14 columns a week that we attempt to spread out from the left to the right to the middle. So we are trying, and so we do place these columns for that very reason.
Uh-huh.
And to Rex's point, the pages are labeled opinion.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever choose a column because other columnists who you regularly have in the paper are on vacation?
Yes. In fact, that's how this Michael Reagan column got in. We were at the veritable bottom of our selections. He's not one of the regular columnists in our rotation, but he and a couple of others we do have as reserves. The syndicated columnists, many of them have great schedules because they all seem to go off at Christmas time, and then we're running around looking to fill up the hole in the paper.
Now, Rex, as for you, you, sir, as a very good writer, and you are, and you run a terrific paper, Times Union. However, I noticed lately that the Berkshire Eagle, the paper that I write for on Saturdays, has you regularly on their editorial page. They lift from the Times Union your columns, your weekly columns, which are often on, most of the time, on journalism.
Not half the time I write about journalistic issues. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they put you in the paper every week.
Very nice.
Now, it is nice of them, but what's interesting to me is the fact that the Berkshire Eagle and the Times Union just literally are next door neighbors as well, you know, as admirers. So I'm fascinated that they do that. Do you have any explanation for it?
I can't imagine why they would publish my column.
Do they purchase it? I mean, is it a syndicate?
It goes on the Hearst Newswire, which is distributed by the New York Times News Service.
Right.
So anybody who's a client of the New York Times News Service gets my column.
Yeah.
If
a very
the
good column.
Editors, well, thank you. If the editors in D.C. decide to put it out there. But I try to write it for our local audience. I'm not trying for a national audience, but sometimes it can be edited to take out some of the local stuff. So it appears in, like recently, it's appeared in the Austin American Statesman, the Dallas Morning News, the Las Vegas Sun, that kind of stuff.
I love Austin.
Around.
I'd be proud to be in
that. Incidentally, since we're throwing kudos your way, I thought that your newspaper's editorial on the Foyle and the Putnam County business was excellent.
What did he say? What did he say?
Well, it was very pointed in the fact this is the case with the Putnam County, New York, is right now refusing to release the gun permit holders' names and addresses to the Journal News, which has already gotten into the soup in the eyes of many for publishing the list of gun holders in Westchester and Rockland counties. But they now want to do the same for Putnam, and the Putnam County clerk is refusing to give them that information. The state senator representing that district has been predictably verbose about
this.
What
do you say, predictably verbose? Some people think he's a little strange.
He's been rather outspoken on a number of issues dating back to his prior tenure, when I was vaguely aware of him when I was publishing the Putnam County Courier in one of my hats that I wore at one point. But as Rex's editorial, his newspaper's editorial pointed out, that this is illegal. They have to give them these names. If you want to change the law, we change the law. But it was just very well written, I thought, and very direct in its criticism of the state senator.
The point is, the Freedom of Information Law is not something that is voluntary. You must yield the documents that are public documents. You may complain about it, but you must do so. And in refusing to do so, the Putnam County taxpayers are going to shoulder the burden of paying the legal costs of the Journal News in obtaining those documents.
And you, in fact, Rex, have been at the Times Union in the forefront of foiling materials.
We have, and getting payments from the city of Albany and from the state legislature when they illegally withheld documents. We have been awarded those fees by judges, and the law has, as a result, in fact, of some of our intercession, I think the law has been changed and strengthened so that it is even more likely that citizens will be able to obtain payment so that it won't cost them to get the documents that the law requires the government to make public.
Very interesting.
It's not about Alan.
But I noticed something that I don't think you guys probably saw. Maybe you did.
No, we probably didn't.
The New York Times has now foiled from the county government in New York the names of the revolver holders there.
Long ago. Did so.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, the case has been pending for the last 2 years.
And wow, that's
a still
long time.
Pending.
Yeah, should it take that long?
Well, because governments that don't want to release information will intentionally delay and
stall.
Foot drag and stall. And motion practice by the lawyers delays this stuff. We've taken years sometimes to get information in our own cases, and you just have to persevere. So
that's not what those laws were intended
to
do, were they?
Not at all. The case is still under appeal. The judge in the Times case allowed the release of the data with some redactions, and the New York Police Department appealed, and so that case is still under appeal.
But the Times, interestingly, seems to be saying, we have no intention of publishing these names. We just want them. Now, that's very interesting.
That is not an official statement, but that is the supposedly, according to Capital, which is a website on New York State politics and government, a Times source, quote unquote, said the paper rarely, if ever, publishes raw data, and it had no intention of publishing the addresses of the permit holders.
Now, Rex, do you think that's possibly said and by a, quote, source? Because the Times saw how much trouble the Putnam County newspaper got into, the Westchester County?
You could speculate that, but I suspect that the Times' position would be the same as ours. I don't think that we would publish raw data of permit holders.
Well, why do you think they did it?
Well, different editors have different points of view about what's valuable. I would take the Journal News at its word that this is a valuable public service in their eye to make this data available so that people know where the handguns are. Unfortunately, we can't know where the long guns are. You know, we have no idea where shotguns, rifles, automatic weapons, or where illegal guns are.
Yeah,
so
well,
it's
Andrew Cuomo,
incomplete data.
Andrew Cuomo, in his State of the State, went out of his way to talk about the fact, even though he's coming down hard on gun owners, that he had a, I guess, a Remington
yes.
rifle? Yeah. Shotgun. All I know is that if I've got a little kid, here's a realistic journalistic purpose, and the kid wants to play next door. Well, there isn't a day. Well, no, there's lots of days, but there are quite frequently you'll see that some kid got a hold of a gun and hurt themselves. So if I'm a doting parent, I might want to tell my child, don't go play over there. They got guns over there.
You know, I hear that. That was the only reason that I would have been persuaded to print that list. I'm with Rex, so I would not have printed the names and addresses. But that argument, we want to know who our kids have. But in absence of that list, wouldn't the mother or father go to the next door neighbor whose kid's house and say, by the way, do you have any guns here and are they secured?
No, most people.
Why not?
Because most people don't go next door and say, by the way, they think
no,
they're
but
not.
They,
you know, do you happen to have any guns here? I mean, that's very very, very tenuous.
I think, it could be done that way.
By the way, I should point out that the addresses and names of the gun holders were posted back in August of 2010. I mentioned this last week by a website called whospackingandwhy.com.
Yeah.
And now most recently, Gawker.com just published a list of gun owners in New York City in all five boroughs. So it took Gawker, though, 2.5 years to get that information out of the New York Police Department, and the addresses were redacted by NYPD before it was released.
They're not allowed to do that, are they?
I should not think they would be, no. But they did, and so Gawker went ahead and published the names without addresses, which is even less valuable information because how many Joe Smiths are out there who might be mistaken for another Joe Smith? So the value of that particular database seems limited to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's a very interesting debate. What's going on with Al Jazeera?
That wasn't the topic we were going to take up next, but that's fine, Alan.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right, Alan. Since you don't get to read the mail anymore, you could moderate
instead. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Al Jazeera, you know, of course, has bought Al Gore's, Al Jazeera, Al Gore, whoever, Current Network. So now that gives Al Jazeera a foothold in which it's going to be available in 40 million U.S. homes.
I don't understand something. I've been I get down in New York City and I turn the television on and I can see Al Jazeera news down there. I've always been able to see that. Why is this different?
Well, because New York City is on a cable system that has access to Al Jazeera, but most of the cable systems in the U.S. do not. But many, many of them do have access to Current TV, and now Al Jazeera's in there on that contract.
I could be wrong about this, but I believe that the Al Jazeera deal with Current is a forerunner of Al Jazeera establishing a new network called Al Jazeera America, which is different than the Al Jazeera that I believe you're seeing and the different than the Al Jazeera that is available on the internet that I've seen from time to time. So I think that's the distinction. But there are two interesting questions about it. One is, as soon as the deal was announced that this was happening, Time Warner pulled Current TV.
Yeah, what's that about?
Current TV's ratings are apparently lower than low. And
you got to find it first on channel, what is it?
For whatever reason, but
whatever.
Time Warner and other, the satellite providers will take channels off if they feel as if the channel is not well supported.
On a typical night last year, Current TV had only 42,000 people watching it
nationwide.
Yeah.
So they would suggest that this is the opportunity. We may as well just take it off the air.
Elliot Spitzer said of Current TV, where he has a program, had a program. He said, nobody's watching, but we're having a good time.
Well, some of the programs weren't bad, including Olbermann's when he was on, but the production values were awful, which is one of the reasons Olbermann said he got mad. But it is very hard to find. It was not getting any traction because it is a left channel, and MSNBC has already staked out that corner. So you have MSNBC on the left and Fox on the right, and Current wasn't able to get a foothold. But the other question is, did Time Warner take it off the air as a anticipation of Al Jazeera coming on, and they don't want to run Al Jazeera?
And what do you think that reason is? There's a sort of anti-Arab bat.
Well, there's that, or the potential that they, just strictly from a business standpoint, that they want to negotiate a better deal with Al Jazeera than they had with Current.
So, and you can consider the business transaction. Also, the fact that Al Jazeera produces a lot of international news, and there's a very limited appetite among American TV viewers for that kind of international news. I think there's enough that there would be a niche that could be profitable, perhaps, but it's never going to be a big seller for a cable company, right?
But I think also Al Jazeera has been stigmatized by most people in this country believe that it is a mouthpiece for terrorism or for the Middle East, in particular because it used to air and receive and then air the bin Laden statements from time to time. Al Jazeera will say, and I think with justification, that the clips that we saw here were just of bin Laden, but in fact that they did run these tapes with context and with, comments before and after, not necessarily just giving him free rein. And frankly, if bin Laden hadn't sent tapes to CBS or NBC, they would have run them also.
So, absolutely. I haven't watched a lot of Al Jazeera, but what little I've seen and what I've heard from people who watch it all the time is that it's a very potent and capable news operation. Our domestic news organizations on television are pretty parochial, very much interested in what's going on in America and very jazzy about Miss Alabama and everything else like that. Mm. And whereas Al Jazeera provides an alternative viewpoint that is important to be available for American TV consumers. So I think it's a terrific thing that's going on.
Yeah, and as you might suspect, it did tremendous coverage of the Arab Spring in Egypt. That's when I was watching it. That was the place to go to watch that coverage.
On the other hand, I don't think we can get away from the fact that if you were to poll Americans as to who they like and who they don't like, you know, there's not a tremendous appetite for Arab culture or for Arab politics here in the States. So I would think that that would have to be factored in as one of the reasons you drop a program like that, because you don't want to offend anybody.
But one would suggest that that Arab culture has been so uncovered here and so lightly covered here and is so misunderstood here that perhaps being exposed to Al Jazeera will inform people, just like any of the other specialty channels that are based on religion or race or whatever.
Sure.
So, I mean, the other thing that's interesting, I don't know if you're going to bring it up, is the fact that Al Gore actually sold this to Al Jazeera, and many people on the left and the right are mad about that. They believe Al Gore is being two-faced, having been the
Al Gore two-faced?
The champion of,
just
you know, of global warming and inconvenient truth, and who did he sell it to for a half a billion with a B dollars was to the Middle East and oil interests. So.
But, you know, you have to not blame
That's an inconvenient truth you just said.
It is indeed. I read a piece suggesting that he was worth, at the time that he lost the presidential race, about $2 million. And this represents a $100 million payday. And at this point, he may well be wealthier than Mitt Romney. So, you know, you can't fault the guy for a $100 million payday.
Well,
right?
I could.
Yeah, I mean, except if you fault where they got their money from that he is now accepting. So.
I'll never forget the time. I got up in the middle of the night and I saw a wonderful Al Gore speech at a time when he was really being put down. And he was talking to some kids in Washington, D.C. It was the middle of the night. And I said to our crew over here, get that.
Was this after he lost the presidential race?
You know, I don't really remember, but I said, get it, because it's a great thing. It's a very animated speech. I think it was after he lost. And this is the Al Gore nobody knows. So we had given out Bill Moyers tapes as premiums and other things. And I said, that would be wonderful. So we call, nothing. Finally, we get Dave Gustino, who can get anything, to call them. And I get Maurice Hinchey, the congressman, to intervene for us with his very good friend, you know, Al Gore.
Uh-huh.
And then we hear the day before the fund drive that we had been denied. They weren't going to allow us to do this. And the quote I got, I have no idea if it's accurate or not, but the quote I got via the Gore people to David, I believe, was, Mr. Gore doesn't want anyone to profit from his material. And I'm saying,
at least you didn't say who's Shartok. That would have been really the death of the man, right?
A public radio statement?
Oh, yeah. Well,
you see what I mean?
I see what you mean. I get it. Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Look at the course.
You don't know if it's accurate.
Look at how life changed and the world changed. Al Gore narrowly loses, and I put loses in question mark,
right,
the presidency.
Yeah.
He then gains about 100 pounds. I mean, as someone who's weight challenged, I feel for him, but nevertheless,
no,
he
I don't
did.
Think we should talk about weight here.
He then splits up from his wife after those
kisses. The kiss.
You know,
kiss.
And then he buys and gets into this, then does the Inconvenient Truth, wins an Oscar, goes into this TV business, and now a half a billion dollars later, here we are. So all because of a few hanging chads, this could have been a lot different.
Absolutely so. Here's a topic that we need to take a look at. Here's a letter that perhaps, Ira, you alone will be the right person to answer this. Dear Media Project, a newspaper doesn't just rent space to advertisers that they can do anything they want with. Some measure of oversight is applied. How do you set acceptable limits for ad copy and images?
It differs by paper, but all ads that are perhaps controversial in nature should be sent to the ad director, who likely in turn will talk about it with the public. And they decide whether the ad is fit for the paper. And if we choose not to publish an ad, we will go back to the advertiser and thank them very much for the opportunity to run their business, but we choose not to. We legally are not allowed to tell them why.
But we do
review ads. I mean, obviously 99.5% of the ads don't need to be reviewed because they're routine. But if there are particularly questionable ads, they are, in fact, reviewed.
And we get that here at Public Radio, too. We don't have ads, of course. We have what we call underwriting, which is very different. But every once in a while, somebody will try to slip something over that breaks the rules, and we'll say no. And by the way, the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled on this and says that public radio stations have the right to make those decisions.
Really?
I believe it's a St. Louis case.
Mm-hmm. I have nothing comparable to add to this because I only do editorial content, but you know, we have to make judgments about what we allow on blogs. If we start editing blog posts from citizens, then it becomes our responsibility and we're culpable for that. We're liable for it. So we are basically just a publisher of the blog content, and therefore we can either reject or publish what people post on blogs, but we can't edit and deal with it. So that's how the current law is anyway with respect to blogs. So, yeah. Which used to be much more frequent, yeah. You know, of course, back in the days when airliners crashed all the time.
And advertise more,
yes. You don't have that so much these days. All right, that's all we have time for this week on the Media Project.
Yeah, we did a lot of topics.
Sure?
I think this is an hour program.
Are you sure this is all we need? Because I remember last week or 2 weeks ago.
The theme song went forever.
He played the theme song twice.
Well, we had a little problem here. I forgot to turn on the timer when we started this program. So,
and Rex,
we're
you wanted to be
out.
The moderator, and now you can't even press the stupid button.
Join us next week, folks, on the Media Project.
I'll tell you quite reliably off the record.